Hello, and welcome to Here and Now, the Tynmouth and Dawlish Talking Newspaper. Today is Friday the 12th of September, and once again it's the Green Team's turn to read you items from the Dawlish Gazette and the Tynmouth Post. My name is Gwen Wedden, and today I'm joined by our readers Chris, Graham and Lynn, who will introduce themselves in a moment. Before we get started, I thought you might be interested to know that these notable events in history all happened on the 12th of September. Going back to 490 BC or BCE, the Battle of Marathon, where the Athenians defeated the Persian Empire. In 1440, this day saw the founding of Eton College in England. Also on the 12th of September, English explorer Henry Hudson sailed into the mouth of a large river, now called the Hudson in his honour, and that was in 1609. In 1953, John F. Kennedy and Jacqueline Bouvier were married. And in 1992, Mae Jemison became the first African-American woman in space. And now we'll go over for our first item.
Hello, it's Chris here, and I have the lead article in the Tynmouth Post. Pride for town as the rainbow magic flows. Tynmouth was alive to the sound of music and dancing last weekend as the town celebrated its annual Pride Festival. The event was aimed at bringing all sections of the community together, regardless of age, gender, religion, sexuality, or any other demographic characteristic that might attract discrimination, under the banner of inclusivity and enjoyment. Holland's Road was turned into a live performance venue with a stage hosting everything from bands and community choirs to drag acts and children's entertainers. The rainbow magic spread throughout the town, with businesses decorating their windows and flying flags. A market in the Triangle, craft sessions at Tynmouth Library and a transmakers market at the Folk Preservation Society added to the atmosphere of community and inclusion. It was fantastic to see families and all sections of our communities meeting together, breaking boundaries and enjoying themselves, said Tynmouth Pride event director Paul Burgess. Despite one or two complaints about noise, the community rallied around to support the event. Tynmouth Pride organisers said they checked sound levels regularly and that the live entertainment had finished by 11 p.m. each night. The Pride Committee, who are all volunteers and work throughout the year to put the event together, said they are grateful to everyone who took part, had fun and showed that Tynmouth could unite as a community. The event was funded by street collections, sponsorship from local businesses and grants from the National Lottery Community Fund, Tynmouth Town Council, Tesco Community Support and the Teignbridge Councillor Community Fund. Next year's Pride Festival will be on from September the 4th to the 6th. And there are some really interesting photographs of people, so a lot dressed up, obviously enjoying themselves at last week's event.
Hello, I'm Graham, and the first Dawlish Gazette headline today I have is Residents Unhappy on Their Misery Mile. Angry motorists in Exminster are up in arms at roadworks which are causing delays of up to an hour. Engineers working for National Grid are working on a £150,000 upgrade of a substation and installing new underground cables. But traffic control lights have left drivers facing long queues and taking, in some cases, up to an hour just to get out of the village. County Councillor Alan Connett raised the issue at a meeting of the council, which he said was to highlight issues with utility firms treating our roads like it was their works compound. He said, "It's ridiculous, and National Grid must know what's happening, yet appear to be doing nothing. I fully understand the anger of residents. We all understand utilities need to do their work, but it does seem National Grid is taking a massive liberty at Exminster. A Devon County Highways Enforcement Officer was sent to the scene at Sanneville Way, who reported traffic was moving slowly but freely at the time of his visit. But there had been issues with the lights that morning, and a battery had to be replaced, which resulted in chaos. Laying 500 metres of new cables has required stage roadworks, which have been carefully planned and organised with the local highways authority. Once cables have been installed, road resurfacing has been carried out, and the curing of the new surface can take up to 24 hours before vehicles can use it. We're now working on the final 200 metres of the project, with two-way lights in operation. We understand it can be frustrating for people's journeys to be delayed and apologise for the inconvenience. We aim to complete this important upgrade work by September the 14th.
Hello, I'm Lynn, and I have a lovely article with lots of photographs to tell you about the Widdicombe in the Moor Fair. An internationally renowned event saw thousands making the trek to Dartmoor on Tuesday this week to experience the fun of Widdicombe Fair. With its roots set in the agricultural traditions of the Moor, the all-day event still remains true to its origins. From its beginnings as a popular fair dealing in local livestock, it has become over the years a showcase for the cream of locally bred Dartmoor stock, as well as being the premier event of the Moorland social calendar. There was a full day of ring events, kicking the day off with sheep, cattle and horse judging. And throughout the day, visitors to the volunteer-run show were able to enjoy live music, a lumberjack show and a tug-of-war contest as just some of the fun that was on offer. And as always, a certain gentleman astride a certain grey horse was spotted amongst the crowds, as Widdicombe Fair isn't complete without Uncle Tom Cobley and all. And there's some lovely photographs that accompany this article. A 13-year-old Becky Stacey is showing to very fine effect her flock of white-faced Dartmoor sheep before the judging happens. Carrying in a pole for the country dancing, pupils from Widdicombe Primary School get the day off to a start so that they can also enjoy the fair with their dancing. Horse judging in the main ring and the shadow of the cathedral church, Widdicombe St Pancras Church, beautiful horses, pied and all sorts. And, of course, there's a photo of Uncle Tom Cobley himself on his white horse riding into the ring. Tractors, I don't know if you like them, but they were there as well, of varying types. And also it looked like there seemed to be quite a nice bar, because there's a gentleman farmer with a very cheeky red-spotted scarf supping a pint where he thinks no one can spot him.
Seafood self-sufficiency to important dependence. More than a century of data reveals how the UK has gone from supplying domestic seafood needs from productive home waters to importing seafood from almost 90 countries. University of Exeter researchers compiled data on UK fishing and seafood imports from 1900 to 2020. That's 120 years. They found that catch in the UK waters declined in the 1970s because of overfishing, and subsequently because of regulations brought in to rebuild fish stocks. Imports grew to meet the growing supply gap, and by 1985, imports overtook domestic landings. Seafood eaten in the UK is mostly the big five: cod, haddock, salmon, tuna and prawns, which are either depleted or non-existent in our waters. The UK now imports more than six times as much seafood as it did in 1900, and it comes from over 2,000 miles away on average, with China being the largest supplier. Today, an estimated 80% of UK seafood demand is met by imports from overseas fisheries. The historical records show that the UK imported from five countries in 1900 and 89 in 2020, said author Zoe Hurd from the Centre for Ecology and Conservation on Exeter's Penryn campus in Cornwall. We now import seafood from all continents, showing how our demand for seafood has an increasingly global reach. But with that growing reach comes a responsibility to ensure British seafood imports are not driving overfishing and destructive fishing in distant waters. Co-author Callum Roberts, Professor of Maritime Conservation at the University of Exeter and lead scientist for the Convex Seascape Survey, said, "The seas around countries like the UK once supported prolific fisheries that easily met national demand for fish. But more than 100 years of intensive overfishing and mismanagement have diminished opportunities, forcing us to get fish from further afield. These distant fisheries in places like West Africa and the Indian Ocean often deprive local communities of badly needed seafood and employment." Zoe Hurd added, "Our results demonstrate the urgent need to improve fisheries management to help local stocks recover, diversification of consumption beyond the big five, and better international collaboration to break the serial depletion of popular food fish." Maybe that should be fish food. Co-author Ruth Thurston, Associate Professor in Marine and Historical Ecology at the University of Exeter, said, "This study emphasises the importance of considering not only how our fish are caught, but where our fish come from. Our favoured species are not only caught using highly destructive gear, but the distances these products travel can also have a high carbon footprint. Switching to fish caught in UK waters using sustainable fishing methods both supports local coastal communities and efforts to reduce carbon." This work was funded by the European Research Council.
Action against waste going from strength to strength. Voluntary groups across Devon are playing a key role in the fight to reduce waste, Devon County Council has said. And now, Recycle Devon, an organisation owned by DCC to support residents to reuse, repair and recycle, has listed all the groups on a map. There are currently 118 community organisations listed, including community fridges, repair cafes and much more besides. Newton Abbott Community Fridge, located at the Courtney Centre, is listed, as is Abbott's Kurzweil Repair Workshop, as well as several other groups across Tinbridge, including in Bovey Tracy, Buckfast Lee, Chudley, Dawlish, Starcross and Tynmouth. The experiences of volunteers, such as Inge Page at Ashburton Community Fridge, which reduces food waste by making surplus food freely available to all residents of the town, and the role of organisations such as Save Food Hub and how they work to benefit their communities, can also be found through Recycle Devon's website. Councillor Ruth Williams, Acting Chair of the Devon Authority's Strategic Waste Committee, said, "It is fantastic to see so many local resources available to support households in reducing, reusing and repairing across the county. The community map is a useful tool to show what's available locally, and it may also inspire people to set up new groups to benefit the community." And a little bit of advice here, if I can just read, check out the Recycle Devon community map. to find out what's happening near you. And at the end, Recycle Devon includes tips for reusing and recycling when at home, school or the shops.
MP demands clearer visa path for Ukrainians. Newton Abbott MP Martin Wrigley has welcomed the government announcement offering a further 24 months extension to the Ukrainian visa scheme. But he says he will continue to push for further guarantees for our Ukrainian friends, as the decision does not provide certainty. Mr. Wrigley has been campaigning to support Ukrainians who are living in Teignbridge while the war continues. They are in the country under the government's Homes for Ukraine scheme. Currently, there are 2,399 Ukrainians in Devon. Of the 270,000 visas issued under the Homes for Ukraine scheme. Visas were initially offered for 3 years and the scheme extended by 18 months in February. But many are looking at their visas coming to an end and the extension will now allow them a further 2 years. Mr. Wrigley said, "This decision will provide much needed relief to families who have been living with the uncertainty and fear as their visas approached expiry. However, while this is a vital step forward, I urge the government to go further. Families who have lived, worked and contributed to our communities for over 2 years need more than a temporary reassurance. Ukrainians need lasting security." He's calling on the Home Office to ensure time already spent under the Homes of Ukraine, Ukraine Family Scheme and Ukraine Extension Scheme will count towards applications for indefinite leave to remain or citizenship or other long-term residency. He said Ukrainians should not be left starting from zero after years of building their lives here, and he wants a clear pathway to settlement for those who do wish to make the UK their permanent home. He said this would recognise their contribution to our economy and society and would provide families with dignity, stability and the ability to plan their futures. In a letter to the Home Secretary to push for further guarantees, he said communities across the UK have opened their doors and their hearts to these fleeing Putin's war. They need to know the government will stand with them for the long term. And there's a photograph of MP Martin Wrigley at a Ukrainian Day flag raising.
A welcome return for Popular Garden Show. Chudley Garden Show made a welcome return to the calendar last weekend. The event, held on Saturday at Chudley Town Hall, was the first time it had been held since the COVID pandemic, and organisers were more than happy with the turnout for the show's revival. As well as the flower, fruit and vegetable competitions, there were also prizes up for grabs in sections for photography, baking and craft work. Co-organisers Rosalind McClure and Mark McNair thanked everyone who participated in the event and who came to visit, and had a special mention for the main organiser, Carol Smart, who was instrumental in the revival of the show, but unfortunately, because of ill health and of an injury, was unable to attend the event and see the fruits of her handiwork. And there are some photographs, as you would expect. There's a lovely craft one that the children have made. They've decorated eggs to look like minions. And there's a delicious-looking carrot cake ready for testing and tasting. Some huge carrots and some beautiful flower displays. It was obviously a popular event.
Dawlish Autumn Concert inspired by St. Nicholas. The Feast of St. Nicholas is the inspiration for this year's Dawlish Choral Society Autumn Concert. The Society's musical director, Nicholas Gardner, has selected the St. Nicholas Mass by Haydn. "There was often a church to St. Nicholas by the harbour," writes Christina Civita, "where sailors could give thanks for a safe voyage, just like the one at Ringmore. This ancient church has stained glass windows which tell of his patronage of sailors and merchants and his protection of children. The roundel shows his miracle of the restoring the three dead infants back to life, lifting their arms in praise. He was also renowned for giving to the poor, like the three purses of gold to a poor man as dowries to his daughters. This legend lives on as Santa Claus to this day, coming up to Christmas. December the 6th is his feast day, and also the day of Haydn's employer, Prince Nicholas of Esterhazy. The Mass was first performed in 1772 in his honour. It is a lively, cheerful work. The usual seven parts of it are in our familiar Latin, with a small supporting orchestra. The concert takes place at 7:30 on Tuesday, December the 2nd, at St. Gregory's Church in Dawlish. And if further information might help you, it's available from Ailsa Spackman, and her phone number is 01626 891 584.
We're on the road to nowhere fast. I'm afraid this is another article on the subject of roadworks. Drivers in Dawlish are encountering more roadwork hell as two utility companies carry out work. While South West Water's ongoing multi-million pound scheme to improve water quality is affecting residential roads around the town, now Wales and West Utilities has started its own scheme as well. This is expected to last for 6 weeks. Its project is to replace a 110-metre old gas pipe coming out of Exeter Road. But the traffic management has caused major delays for anyone getting in and out of the town of Dawlish. County Councillor Rosie Dawson said the work has got to be done to avoid loss of gas supply, but it's going to be a long haul. Motorists have reported long queues due to the three-way traffic lights in operation on Exeter Road by Sandy Lane. This has led to traffic tailing back to Langdon to get into Dawlish. One driver reported taking 40 minutes to get from Sainsbury's supermarket to Eastcliff Road, and another said it has taken 50 minutes on the bus to get from Sainsbury's to Dawlish Town. Councillor Dawlish has been in contact with the county's highways officers, who visited to check the management of the A379 lights. She said the work is needed, but mayhem has ensued. Work began on Monday, but the gridlock continued into Tuesday. The traffic management system is in place to adjust the lights according to the build-up of traffic on queues either side, and it's manned between 7:30 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. Councillor Dawson said County Highways Office will be checking daily on how the lights are operating, but drivers have been left frustrated by the sheer volume of road closures and lights in place across the town. One parent said, "The school run is now a nightmare." Another claimed the works had badly affected bus services, with some cancellations and other services full. One driver described it as an absolute shambles. Another resident said, "This is absolutely ridiculous. It's snarling the whole town up on top of all the other road closures, traffic chaos in the town." Meanwhile, in the town, by the lawn, in the town centre, South West Water's continuing works have meant the closure of Brunswick Place, with diversions, of course, in place. The water firm is also working at Sandy Lane and currently is taking material from the ground, which is involving more lorries needing access to other areas. It has been reported that coach drivers are still being directed to Sandy Lane, but due to South West Water Works, there's no space for them to turn. So all in all, we need this all to be done, don't we?
MP blasts Royal Mail cuts amid profit. Newton Abbott MP Martin Wrigley says he is furious with Royal Mail for announcing profit while controversially cutting deliveries. Mr. Wrigley has accused Royal Mail of betraying its customers after the company confirmed it had returned a profit for the first time in 3 years. This is despite announcing that it will be cutting key services. Last month, Royal Mail announced plans to cut back their services by only delivering second-class letters on every other weekday and not on Saturdays. Mr. Wrigley says the service in this area has been lacking for years, with instances of first-class post taking days to arrive. He added, "People are complaining to me that they are receiving NHS letters after the appointment date. First-class mail is taking up to 10 days to arrive in some cases, and one constituent complained they had to cancel their subscription for a weekly television magazine as it was arriving so late it was pointless having it." The Liberal Democrats have also previously criticised Ofcom for letting Royal Mail off the hook by allowing it to abandon second-class deliveries. Mr. Wrigley has vowed to keep fighting to improve postal services in the area, especially now that Royal Mail has confirmed it has returned a profit this year. He said, "Slow post is a real issue for my constituents, and I am furious with Royal Mail for cutting back its crucial second-class post service, despite being in profit. It's a kick in the teeth for local communities and for hard-working posties doing a great job, despite having to work for a leadership that is failing them. Simply put, Royal Mail is betraying its customers, and it is completely unacceptable. I will continue to fight for residents in my constituency who deserve punctual and regular deliveries."
Cleverly praises Pilgrims after stunning win. And I would just, if you don't mind, just point out that Pilgrims are referring to Plymouth Argyle Football Club. Tom Cleverly hailed his Plymouth Argyle side after they produced arguably their best performance of the season so far to defeat visiting Stockport County 4-2 in Sky Bet League One on Saturday. In what was a dominant display from start to finish from the Pilgrims, it was little wonder the head coach was quick to speak in glowing terms about his players at the final whistle. "A brilliant team performance. We managed the game well, and I couldn't be prouder of the lads," said Cleverly. "I just put it on players today that it was all about the performance and doing the things we work on to the best of their ability. And I thought the lads did it fantastically well. They deserve all the credit." An own goal from Stockport County Kyle Wootton at a Caleb Watt shot put the home side 2 goals in front before Ollie Norwood replied for the visitors in adding on time at the end of the first half with a controversially awarded penalty. After the break, midfielder Bradley Ibrahim bagged his first goal for the club before striker Laurent Tolac put them further ahead in the 75th minute. Wootton got one back for County later on, but it was nothing more than a consolation effort. The victory, Argyle's second in 7 starts, lifted them to 18th in the table and gave them a much-needed boost ahead of this Saturday's trip to Luton Town.
Dawlish Brook fishing ban proposed. Fishing could be banned in the Dawlish Brook completely if a new bylaw is introduced. Town councillors have voted in favour of bringing in the total ban following volunteer efforts to clean up the waterway. The call also comes after several of the town's waterfowl, including 2 of the iconic black swans, were injured after ingesting abandoned fishing lines. In July, the town council appealed to the public to stop fishing in the brook following incidents. Fishing is already banned in the brook unless a special licence is authorised by Devon County Council, but the town council is now actively looking to impose a bylaw to the brook from Carpenter's Bridge to the sea to outlaw fishing entirely. Town councillors voted to back a notice of motion proposed by Councillor Rosie Dawson. Now the town council is to ask officers at Teignbridge Council and the Environmental Agency to instigate such a ban. Councillor Dawson said, previously we have asked Teignbridge Council what can be done rather than putting a bylaw in place, but a ban now needs to be in force. The Town Council is not in a position to enforce the ban, but if a bylaw is there, it could be enforced by either police or the Environmental Agency. There are, if they are reported issues. There are different options for enforcement, but ultimately we'll be able to put signage in place all around the river, and it seems bonkers to be doing so much work and working hard to protect and improve the brook, which is thriving, and then not do anything about stopping the fishing. The brook has a thriving population of fish with three periods of spawning already this year. There have been regular sightings of people fishing along the brook, but it's not known if any were checked for licences. And while there are some no fishing signs in place, there have been calls for more to be installed. And of course, there's a picture accompanying this article of one of our lovely iconic black swans who have also been hurt with the fishing that's been going on. I have been asked if I would read out this notice about Audrey Wilson. 10 years ago, Audrey was one of our first listeners, and she turned 100 years old earlier this year. Sadly, Audrey passed away last week, and she doesn't have any family, so we thought it would be nice for some of us to attend her funeral, if that's at all possible. The funeral arrangements are Friday the 26th of September, 10:30 a.m. at St. Agatha's Church, Dawlish. That's followed by a wake at the Mount Pleasant Inn. There's also one other event to tell you about, and that is Stanley Edward Bellman, Stan. He died peacefully at Torbay Hospital on the 31st of July 2025. Stan was aged 109 years. He lived in Bishop Stainton. A service of thanksgiving for Stan's life will be held at the Parish Church of St. John the Baptist in Bishop Stainton on Friday the 19th of September 2025 at 12 noon. And more details can be got from Les Down Funeral Director at Stockman and Loram in Paignton. Moving on to events, here's some quick reminders about events that are coming up next week. So on Tuesday the 16th, Dawlish Community Transport are going to St. Mary Church and Babbacombe. And the Sheldon and Ringmore WI meet at the Victoria Hall in Sheldon at 7 p.m. Wednesday the 17th, Holcombe Garden Society meet at Holcombe Village Hall at 2:30. And at 7 p.m. at the Victory Hall in Kenton, there will be a talk entitled Snippets of the South Devon Railway. Saturday the 20th, St. Paul's Monthly Sale, and in the afternoon there is a talk at Powderham Church. Sunday the 21st, there will be a string quartet playing at Kenton Church at 4 p.m. The following week, Tuesday the 23rd, of September, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Darts Farm. The cost is £12.50. Thursday the 25th, Dawlish Garden Society meet at 7 p.m. in the Manor House for a talk on bats. Friday the 26th of September, there is a Macmillan Coffee Morning at the Anchor Inn, Cockwood, from 10 until 12 noon.
Zoo mourns loss of Manny the Rhino. Paignton Zoo's popular black rhinoceros has died at the age of 23 years. Manyara, affectionately nicknamed Manny, was put to sleep on Tuesday, 2nd of September, after he'd stopped responding to medical treatment for a chronic health condition. Following a decline in his condition that was beginning to impact his quality of life, our veterinary team made the difficult but compassionate decision to humanely euthanize him, a spokesperson for Paignton Zoo said. Manny was extremely popular with staff and visitors. He was known for his wonderfully gentle nature, combined with a playful spirit that endeared him to everyone who met him. Manny was born in Port Lympne Wild Animal Park on September the 18th, 2002. He arrived at Paignton Zoo on June the 16th, 2010, when he was 7 years old. For many years, he shared his enclosure in Paignton with the female eastern black rhinoceros, Sita, who sadly passed away in 2024. While Manny never bred, he was an invaluable ambassador for his species, educating thousands of visitors about the critical plight of rhinoceros in the wild and the urgent need for conservation action. The eastern black rhinoceros is classified as critically endangered by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, which makes each and every rhino incredibly precious. Paignton Zoo said it remains committed to rhino conservation through its support for the Dambari Wildlife Trust in Zimbabwe's Matobo Hills, and to protect both black and white rhinoceros populations in their natural habitat. Paignton Zoo has invited any of Manny's fans to share memories or messages of condolence to celebrate his life. Manny's death comes after the loss of two female Hartmann zebras in April, Joanna, one of the Rothschild giraffes, in March, and the TV star gorilla Kivu in February.
Bun scores thrice in Tynmouth's triumph. Tynmouth Rugby Football Club opened their 2025-26 league campaign with a home fixture against North Petherton, who have previously proven to be difficult opponents. A good crowd saw the Tins start well and dominate the early exchanges. After a period of prolonged pressure, loose head prop Dane Layton scored from close range, with the try being converted by outside centre Jack Main to give them a 7-0 lead. Jack Bond was next to cross the white line, and Main added the extras once again. North Petherton then closed the gap a little with a successful penalty, making it 14-3. Number 8, Jamie Gray, picked up from the back of a scrum and headed over for the host's third try, and the conversion being missed for 19-3. Their guests hit back once more, and a pre-planned move from a scrum proved fruitful, resulting in their first try of the afternoon. North Petherton failed to field a high ball, though, and Jack Bond pounced, kicking on and stretching the Tynmouth lead to a 24-10 heading into the break. The second half was a much tighter affair, and the result, Tynmouth took the option to kick for posts at the game approached the 60-minute mark. Main's successful kick took Tins beyond two scores, giving them more breathing room. They weren't done either. A neat cross-field kick from Rio Cooper, setting up the former Newton Abbott man Jack Bond for his hat-trick try. Main converted for the score to be 34-10. North Petherton completed the scoring for the match with an unconverted try, but it wasn't enough to rescue them a losing bonus point. Head coach Colin Stewart spoke of being pleased with the result and the performance in general after the game, adding that there was a lot to take away from the game that the players will need to work on.
Coughton Holidays Golden Anniversary Big Bash. A Teambridge holiday park is hosting a 50th birthday celebration. Coughton Holidays is marking its major milestone, and the owners have thrown out an open invitation to the party. This will be on Saturday, September the 13th, so that's tomorrow. The award-winning holiday park will celebrate its golden anniversary with an all-day birthday bash packed with live music, family fun and community spirit. This year marks 5 decades of Coughton, from its beginnings in 1975 as a small campsite to be now becoming a holiday destination. To toast the milestone, guests can raise a glass of Coughton gin, Coughton 75 beer, or an Orchard Breeze cocktail, all specially created to mark the golden anniversary. The action kicks off from 9:30 a.m. and carries on throughout the day. At the Swan Inn, there will be fete stalls, creative workshops, a rodeo sheep, patio games, cake and craft stands, beauty and gin pop-ups, plus a barbecue. A tractor trailer ride, balloon modelling, circus games, face painting, craft sessions from pottery to tie-dye will also all be on offer. Live music takes centre stage with an acoustic set performance from Phil Smythe, open mic sessions and a headline appearance from Rich Cotell. Later, a party band, Fascination, will turn up the volume before the celebrations close with a dance marathon finale featuring the best hits from the 70s through to the noughties. There's also a pool party. While in the evening, an entertainment at the Warren Retreat include children's discos, glow parties, game shows and Coughton's very own Digby's 50th birthday special. All fundraising at the event will support Rowcroft Hospice, with donations collected from stalls, activities and attractions. Helen Scott, director of Coughton Holidays, said, "We're so proud to be celebrating 50 golden years for Coughton. This party is all about saying thank you to our guests, our team and our community. It's going to be a day full of laughter, music, food and fun, and we can't wait to share it with everyone. Entry, by the way, is free to all."
Yet another article about roadworks, I'm afraid. New signage in place for construction lorries. Additional signage has arrived directing all construction traffic to use the newly opened Dawlish Link Road. Following the official opening of the road last month, residents had complained vehicles were still using residential roads to access new build sites. County Councillor Rosie Dawson has confirmed all the new signage has been delivered and was due to be put in place. She said the site manager of Bloor Homes had contacted all suppliers again to state that if lorries do not arrive via the Link Road, he will be refusing to accept goods. She thanked Bloor Homes, Taylor Wimpey and Teignbridge District Council and residents for their patience. The road, which had been promised more than a decade ago, was finally opened to construction traffic to move hundreds of vehicles' movements away from the residential areas and the two schools. Teignbridge Council said the road was open to construction traffic only from August the 18th for heavy vehicles accessing Taylor Wimpey's Brookvale and Bloor Homes' Dawlish View housing developments. This meant all site traffic should now access the developments from the north via the A379 Sainsbury's roundabout. The multi-million pound road is to access land for housing on the outskirts of Dawlish and ease traffic congestion in the town and along the A379. Previously, hundreds of lorries every day have been using Elm Grove Road to get to the sites, passing Dawlish College and Gatehouse Academy and numerous residential properties. Proposals for the road were first put forward when housing development was considered to the northeast of the town more than 10 years ago. It connects the A379 at Sainsbury's to more than 400 new homes except Manton Farm and Swan Park, and access to approximately 400 new homes at Gatehouse Farm.
Cornerstone of fire station retires. Newton Abbott firefighters have said farewell to a long-standing colleague described as the cornerstone of the station. Gary Robinson, who has served Newton Abbott Fire Station for more than 27 years and attended thousands of incidents in that time, hung up his helmet for the final time on August the 31st. Gary has had a colossal impact on everybody who has had this privilege to work alongside him, a spokesperson from Newton Abbott Fire Station said. there will be so many people that will have either been rescued, helped, or interacted with Gary without ever knowing the true measure and worth of this man. His colleagues described him as a shining example of exactly what a firefighter should be, and said the depth of his knowledge and experience, alongside his humour, would never be replicated. And there is a photograph here with Gary Robinson standing inside the Newton Abbott Fire Station with his gift of an engraved statue of two firefighters in breathing apparatus. And he was surrounded by nine of his colleagues, or indeed mates, as he would have been in the past.
Crochet art for Women's Rugby World Cup. The creative talents of crochet and knitters from across Devon, including Newton Abbott, are being showcased in a display to celebrate Exeter's role in the 2025 Women's Rugby World Cup. Newton Abbott WI handwork is a part of the rugby-themed yarn art now adorning the Guildhall and the Royal Albert Memorial Museum in the city of Exeter. The group were delighted to crochet red and white bunting pictured accompanying this article, said Newton Abbott WI press officer Karen Jenks. Thank you to the WI in the city of Exeter for organising this at the last minute, added Karen. Exeter Chief Standy Park Ground is hosting 7 games, including 2 of the quarterfinals. This year's World Cup kicked off on August the 22nd and comes to an end on September the 27th. There's a lovely picture of members of the WI crochet team and their white and red bunting as part of their yarn bombing, as they call it, event and celebration of the 2025 Women's Rugby World Cup.
Father and son tackle rugby walk for charity. A father and son passed through Dawlish, Tynmouth and Sheldon as part of a 4-day fundraising hike for mental health awareness. 8-year-old Jake Chapman and his dad Chris have been passing a rugby ball between them as they have walked from the Exeter Chiefs Sandy Park Stadium to their home ground in Brixham in aid of mental health charity Loose Heads. Chris was inspired to do the walk after going through his own mental health struggles and then helping his son negotiate a really tough year at his old school. Being out and passing a rugby ball between us really helped Jake open up, Chris said. Chris knows firsthand how important talking is in helping overcome mental health struggles. The death of a close friend to suicide brought back a lot of unresolved trauma from his childhood when he lost both parents and his brother to a house fire. I got very good at being fake around my wife and kids, pretending I was fine, fake smile, fake laugh. I would spend most days smiling and pretending I was okay, but when I was alone in my van, I would just cry to myself and then go back to being fake afterwards, he recalled. Chris slowly started opening up to his wife, and his recovery accelerated after he got involved in sports, coaching his daughter at football and his son at rugby. Talking to my wife and just finding the love for sport again helped me massively, and I started to love life again and haven't had to be fake for a few years now and hopefully never will. Seeing the difference in Jake as he opened up about his struggles at school underlined how important talking is. Talking didn't just help Jake, but it helped us as parents to understand how he was truly feeling. Jake has now moved schools and has settled in and made some amazing new friends. After overcoming these challenges, Chris wanted to do something for a mental health charity. The son of Chris's friend, who died by suicide, is excelling at a rugby school in Cornwall, and Jake loves rugby and has played since he was 2. So, Loose Heads, the rugby charity that raises awareness of mental health, was a perfect fit. Chris and Jake are spending around 5 to 6 hours a day walking and talking as they pass a rugby ball to each other over the 4-day challenge from Exeter, along the coast through Dawlish, Tynmouth and Sheldon to Torquay, and finally finishing at Brixham Rugby Club. If our story helps anyone, that would be amazing. Just so people start talking over a coffee or find an activity that helps them open up about how they are feeling, Chris concluded. The father and son duo hope to raise £1,500 from their walk and talk, and donations can be made to the Just Giving page, which is Christopher Chapman 10.
Tin Housing rewards keen gardeners. Gardens in Dawlish and Bovey Tracy came up trumps in this year's Tin Housing in Bloom competition. Sam Kelly from Dawlish won the Individual Garden category. Judges were impressed with the way he had balanced healthy and well-positioned plants alongside a usable garden for his wife and children. The container category was won by Anne and Chris from Bovey Tracy. With the help of their son, Andrew, the couple have created a charming and incredibly well-maintained array of containers in a small place. Tin Housing was unable to award a prize in the communal garden category as no entries had been received. Each winner was presented with a cup engraved with their name, a certificate, and a £25 National Garden gift card. And there is a photograph here of Sam Kelly showing us with pride as he looks at us with his certificate and cup.
Mystery of Manaton's missing phone box. Mystery surrounds what has become of Manaton's only phone box. Residents of the small village on Dartmoor claim it's been cut off from the outside world after BT removed the phone box twice without consulting residents. Manaton is a notorious mobile black spot with no mobile phone reception at all in some areas. Villagers say a few years ago BT took away the village's only phone box without notice. And they eventually bowed to public opinion but replaced the heritage K2 Giles Gilbert Scott box with a modern alternative. That too has now disappeared. It seems there are crossed wires about the fate of the phone box, as while villagers claim the second box was removed, no one is entirely sure when. BT insists there has been no phone box in Manaton since 2020. Raises more questions than answers. Villager Emma de la Fosse explained, "There is no mobile signal here in any area of Manaton. To get any mobile reception at all, we have to drive to Trendlebear Down or to the top of the village. Both are half a mile away from me. With the BT digital switchover coming, we won't have landlines anymore. BT are relying on people having a mobile phone as well as a backup in the event of new digital lines failure, in the event of a power outage or a tech problem. But what if your entire neighbourhood doesn't have a mobile signal? That's why it's so important that BT give Manaton back our phone box. The parish council has never been consulted on the removal of the public call box, and neither has Dartmoor National Park Authority, it seems. It's all a bit of a mystery, really, because we don't have any information about BT's decision," she said. "It makes it impossible to register a complaint with Ofcom. At best, this situation is inconvenient. At worst, it could cost a life. Ofcom states in areas with poor mobile coverage, a public call box can be the only option for making calls, including to the emergency services. The regulator lists four criteria that prevent a phone box being removed, including evidence that the box is reasonably needed at the site, for example, if you can't rely on any other signals, and in the event of a local emergency. BT says its records show its payphone was removed in 2020. And a spokesman said, "We only remove payphones that are no longer being used in line with Ofcom guidance and following consultation with local authorities." BT says in the event of a power cut after the digital landlines switch over, customers are advised to use a mobile phone. But if a mobile is not an option, free battery backup units are available. So we don't know what's going to happen next. Well, that brings us to the end of our recording for this week, but there's just one thing that I would like to say. Please, if you have any USB sticks lurking around the house, please, please, could you send them back to us? I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's a limited number that we send out if we don't get any returns. So if you've suddenly stopped getting our recordings, it could just be that you've got too many USB sticks in your possession. So please have a look round, see if you can find some USB sticks and send them back to us. It'll make us very happy. Anyway, as usual, if you have any comments or suggestions to us, you can contact us on 07376 147 374. Your readers this week were Chris, Graham and Lynn, and our stalwart producer is Mike. As always, the copying and dispatching is a team effort. So from us, until next time, it's goodbye.